I'm Lauren.
And I'm Ashley. And this, guys, is Nip Tuck Pod.
We are your girl chat. We say the things you want to hear, the things that you're thinking but you don't want to say out loud. And we're all about being strong, aspirational women who basically don't give a...
Lauren, anyway, if you want unfiltered chat, amazing beauty and product recommendations, then look no further, guys. This is the podcast where you will get all of the girly chat.
Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
The amount of time I spent fannying on with a Bunsen burner, Alex, when I could have been learning about my actual biological body clock, it would have saved us a lot of fucking misery as an adult. That's all I'm saying. Hello, everybody, and welcome to Vicky Patterson, The Secret 2. I am joined this week by none other than Love Island star, NHS legend, mental health ambassador, and all-round really good egg. It's, of course, Dr. Alex, everybody. Woo!
Thank you so much. Thank you for having me. I'm very excited indeed. I love that. You're a high energy person, Vicky. I love that.
Do you think?
You've always got energy. Yeah, I think so.
Oh, bless you, babe. That'll be all the caffeine now.
A couple of them before you come on, fair enough.
Shouldn't really say that to a doctor, but never mind. How are you, Petal?
I'm doing all right. It's pretty hot. I shouldn't complain either. I mean, it's warm now, isn't it? Summer's finally here. A bit more positive. I know we've had this news about the the final stage of lockdown being extended a bit, but I still feel quite positive. I still feel happier that we're not completely stuck inside. Yeah, I can see my family. Got my puppy Paddington's growing up. So yeah, I'm happy. Yeah.
I know. I've honestly got so many questions to ask you, but I do want to start because you're a bit like me. Like, I'm a bit of an English rose underneath all this fake tan, right, mate? I am such a delicate little flower, and I am sweating my tits off in this weather. How are you coping? Are you okay?
It's tough. I'm literally right outside. I got factor 50 on. You know, I don't mess about. I'm factor 50 now. Nothing less.
I've literally just been doing this morning. And the segment was outside, and by the time Phil and Holly come out, I was dripping like an egg sandwich, mate. It was awful. It was on like picnic baskets, and all my cheeses were all sweaty and stuff by the time Holly and Phil come. I know. Nobody wants a soggy sausage roll, Al. It was fucking awful.
No one wants a soggy sausage, that's for sure. Horrible,
no.
Yeah.
Phil was fuming about it. Anyway, we'll move on. It's good to know you're taking care of that lovely little skin in this weather.
Important, very important, absolutely. I've accepted now. At 30 years old, there's no tan. I don't tan really. I get a little bit color, a little bit, but not too much. I'm much happier. Look after the skin. It is important as well. Look after the skin. You only get one set of skin. Look after it. Take care of it for life.
And you know what as well, right? When I was younger, I used to be like part of the baby oil brigade, which is, again, another thing I should absolutely not admit to a doctor. But I feel like we're friends now as well. So yeah, I used to go on holiday, sit in Malia for 2 weeks with the lasses, drink woo-woos round the pool all day and cover myself in baby oil, like zero factor in that. I think about it now, and for starters, I haven't got the patience. But secondly, I think, Jesus Christ, you look like a handbag by the time you're 50 if you'd kept on going like that.
Yeah, well, luckily you must have stopped because your skin looks good. But to educate myself, what is a woo-woo? What on earth is a woo-woo? I'm a heato maybe, but a moo-moo or a moo-woo-woo.
Right.
Or is it woo-moo?
Now we're really all going. So a moo-moo is like an oversized, like very lightweight, kind of like poncho for women for the summer. I believe Homer Simpson had one in an episode of The Simpsons.
Oh, really?
They're favored in Hawaii. I think it might be traditional dress out there. Very,
that's cool.
Very lightweight and airy for those summer days. But
a
woo-woo, on the other hand, it's a cocktail. It's a cocktail. And I'm showing me roots here. I think it's like, I think it's very basic. I'm going to say like cranberry vodka and maybe peach snaps. There's not a lot going on,
okay.
But there were.
So I shouldn't bother with a woo. Should I try a woo-woo or not really?
No, Petal, you're too posh for a woo-woo. You stick me at mojitos.
I'll stick to mojito. Okay, fine.
I can't be responsible for you being like mortal drunk on woo-woos. That's just too much. Yeah, no, that's too good. Much for us to take.
Yeah, no good that.
I wanted to start by, first of all, and I'm sure I'm not the first person to say this, but I just wanted to say a huge, huge thank you to you for all. And I reached out to you over the pandemic, but I knew you were so busy. But I just wanted to say fucking well done, Alex. Jesus Christ, yeah. What a man you are.
Well, thanks, very kind of you. I should say as well, because people often, I said this offline, you are a really, really kind person, because a lot of people can say things publicly, oh, you're doing a great job, or you come on a podcast, but you took the time to message me out of the blue, along, and a very kind message as well, and you even offered me to buy me a drink, which I might, we can have a woo-woo together now, you know, but you sent me a genuinely really kind message, and that shows, I think, the kind of person that you are, so thank you very much, and it has been a tough year, I mean, for everyone, actually, regardless of your situation. In many ways, I felt quite lucky that I was able to, you know, obviously what I saw in A&E was very hard, but I was with my friends and my family in some way in A&E, whereas actually as someone who is otherwise living alone, if I was just stuck in and wasn't working in A&E, that'd be really tough. So, you know, honestly, my heart goes out to a lot of people that have spent so much time alone in the last 18 months. It's just been really, really hard. But I feel much better now. I think this Christmas was really tough. I think that really got me because, you know, obviously, as you know, and I think we talked about it before, my brother passed away last summer, which is obviously very hard. And then, you know, going into the winter, you know, I was supposed to go home for Christmas, see my family. And I, to be honest with you, I saw how things were going in the hospital. I was like, this is not going to happen. But just mentally being like, can't go home, didn't see them in New Year's, my brother's birthday, my birthday, my mum's birthday, all that stuff just happened in a time that I couldn't go home or see anyone. Yeah. I think that was very hard. Like, December through to kind of March, I think, was particularly a tough time, but I feel much better now.
Oh, bless you, Alice. Like pandemic aside, you got like, your family has just been through so much, mate. I am so, so sorry.
Yeah, it's going to be a lot of, I think grief takes a long time, and I think a lot of it's delayed because obviously we've been stuck kind of, I mean, like, you feel like you're in trenches a bit, don't you? You're kind of like battling through, but I'll get there. I mean, I'm doing okay. I'm focusing on like the role and the work I'm doing on the mental health. Mm. You know, just got my project, my bath bomb stuff, yes. The book obviously published. Like, trying to throw myself into, I think what I try to do is throw myself into positive spaces. You know, the book really helped me. Writing the book was like, it just, you've got to have something to focus on, I think, when you're going through a tough time. It really does help.
I couldn't agree with you more. And listening to your talk there about how you threw yourself into work for the NHS during the pandemic, how you've thrown yourself into your other projects, like when you were going through the grief of losing your brother, it sounds as though that's how you do deal with grief and loss. It's to be proactive, to find a focus, to keep yourself busy. Am I right there?
Yeah, I think so. And everyone's different because, and of course there is, and some people would argue, well, Alex, the problem is doing that. Are you dealing with things? And yeah. I kind of understand what people mean by that. But I find that for me, if I sit too long and I spend too much time with my thoughts of what if and, you know, guilt that you naturally get when anyone dies, you feel this sense of guilt. Even if there's nothing to do with you in many ways, you just feel this guilt. You know, I find that doesn't help me. So I try and find a balance between sometimes now I sit and think a little bit, but then I don't allow it too long. And I just think, right, come on, let's get on with the day, or let's do something positive, or let's go for a run or go for a walk or something, get outside. But yeah, I mean, you know, naturally, if I'm honest, I'm probably an overworker, like anyway. And if you just leave me be, I'll just work way too hard. Yeah, let alone when something happens, I'm like, go through. So I have to unwind. And actually, like next week, I'm going away for a hot week with some friends to Cornwall, just on holiday, which I think is going to be great. Like my first actual break. And I think that's really important. Downtime is good. So I'm going to have a proper week of chilling out and doing not very much, to be honest. Maybe I'll try a woo-woo or two. That's it.
A woo-woo or two. That sounds like just what the doctor ordered, no pun intended. Yeah. I think, like, and I don't want to dwell too much on this because I have so much lovely stuff I want to talk to you about, in particular the up-and-coming series of Love Island and stuff, which I'm so excited about. But I just wanted to say, like, when it comes to grief and pain and loss and things like that, like, we've all experienced our fair share, and I don't think there's any one right way to deal with it. I think it's totally subjective, and whether you've lost a brother or a best friend, or it's like a relationship breakdown, whatever that loss is, like, everybody has to deal with it in their own way. And some people, they find a focus, they get really busy. Other people, they go to ground and totally feel their feels. But I think however you've chosen to cope with it, Alex, is right for you, and that's all you have to know.
I think that's great advice. I think that's great advice. Everyone's different. Deal with things in the way that you need to. Just obviously make sure things like drugs, alcohol, those things never help, you know. But like, you know, if you need to have a night with your friends and just kind of let it all out, like, that's fair enough. Just do the things you've got to do to kind of get through it.
Cool. course, babe. Oh, bless you. Well, I hope you have a wonderful time in Cornwall. I'm very jealous.
Oh, I can't wait. I hope it's... My luck, though, I'll get there and it'll just rain the whole time. But even if it rains, I'll still enjoy it. I'm still going to enjoy it. Whatever happens... But chill out and make the most of it.
That's it. I'm going to say something very controversial here, and everybody who's listening is going to think, you knob, I fucking hate the hot weather.
Do you? Really?
Alex, I don't mind if I'm sitting in a pool in Portugal or whatever with a woo-woo in my hand, but if I am in London or if I'm at work or if I'm in Newcastle, we're just not built for it as a country. Like, I'm sweating me tits off, me hair looks like Diana Ross. It's just not a great vibe. So, no, I feel like, regardless of the weather,
I get you. Well, you know me. I'm not great with the sun either. Like, I don't... Do you know what my perfect temperature? I like 24, 25 degrees of the breeze. You know, the little breeze is beautiful. Just a gentle breeze in your hair, on your face. Lovely. Sea breeze, if preferable, but any breeze is fine. And it's great. But when you get this nonsense in London, like 33 degrees or whatever, just... I'm not built for this.
No, honestly. I was literally just like... 80% liquid under my dress today. It was gross. It was like a swamp down there. Like, nobody needs that. Like, in Central, I would say anything more than 20 degrees is criminal. Absolutely criminal.
Yeah, too much.
So, we had this wonderful thing every week when the pandemic was really roaring at its height, and we were clapping for our carers, clapping for the NHS, clapping for everybody on a Thursday night. And whereas I feel like it was a lovely gesture, I was out there every Thursday night myself, giving it what for on me pots and pans.
Yeah.
But I also feel like it was potentially not enough. There was not enough done to celebrate our incredibly brave and hardworking NHS. Like, you had your ear to the ground. Like, you were one of those people. What was the general vibe? Were people feeling, were the NHS happy that we did the claps? Did they want more?
I think, do you know what? I know there's mixed opinions on this. If you ask different people, doctors, nurses, you have different answers depending on who you speak to. But I really felt that there was something really amazing about the clap, because there's two things. First of all, it was like a real sense of like motivation and like appreciation. I walked outside Lewisham Hospital a few times when the people were clapping, obviously at a time that I could walk outside. And it was amazing. It was a real sense of like togetherness. Yeah. And I think that brings me on to the second reason, is I think it was bigger than saying thank you to carers. It was a community thing. You know, people were standing on their doorsteps across the street. You know, like it's like in London, where people don't even know their neighbours. You're standing out with your neighbours you've never spoken to, you never interacted with, you, and you're waving, saying hello to everyone. It was the sense of like each week being like, we got through it. We got through a week. We got through another week. And it was amazing togetherness. So, yeah, I think it was a big thing. But do I think the NHS staff deserve a proper pay rise? I do. Do I think 1% is enough? No. I think, you know, most NHS staff have been underpaid for a very long time. And I think it's only fair that we probably reward them, you know, for their hard work properly. But, you know, it's one of those industries, I guess, NHS, where, you know, you do it for the passion and love of the job, not because of the thanks. You won't never get the, you know, the thanks that maybe people would expect. But actually, you know, we love what we do. And like the reward of seeing that person's face when they feel better, the thanks that you get from the patient you're looking after, that, you know, that moment of gratitude you get from one to one is just amazing. I think that's what we all want, really. And in terms of the pandemic, you know, we're just glad to see things a bit better and much better, because it's just tiring eventually.
Of course, mate. And is it like, I know obviously we're reading all these amazing new statistics. We know COVID is definitely like, it's decreasing. There's less cases. And is the vibe in the hospitals better as well?
It's better. But not to put a negative on it, I think the only problem we've got is not the only problem, there's many problems, but one of the problems we have is that because it's been so busy with COVID for so long, a lot of other things like operations and treatments haven't happened.
Yes.
Yeah, which means there's so much pressure on the hospital now to catch up. And departments, A&E is still really busy, not with COVID, but with everything else. And people having injuries and all this, and staff are already tired. So it is tough. I wouldn't say it's just gone, oh, that's it, and it's back to normal. It is tough. But yeah, the cases are low at the moment. They are a little bit rising. The reason is that obviously when the restrictions lift, people interact more. And if you interact more, you're going to have more cases. So it's kind of expected, but we need to keep them low enough that the hospital doesn't become, you know, have big problems. But the really positive thing is that obviously this week, as of today, actually, when we're actually recording this on what is the date today? On the 16th, as we're recording this, the over 21s can have a vaccine now. And by the end of this week, every adult can. So when we have the young people vaccinated, we spread it less. So actually, I feel quite positive, and I do. Towards the end of this year, I hope we'll be much more towards, you know, a better time, really.
It does feel like there's real light at the end of the tunnel. Like, I know, yeah. I know the warm weather certainly does help for everyone apart from me, who's a miserable cow when it's sunny. But no, I feel like the unprecedented rate with which they're rolling out vaccines is incredible. I know, like, myself and my boyfriend have both been invited to Outget Hours now, so that's definitely on the to-do. And I don't know, with the rates going down and stuff, it just feels like there's hope in the air, I suppose.
Yeah, there is. I think so. Everyone feels a bit more cheerful. I think, you know, we've got to understand that a lot of people have lost during this time, whether that's grief or whether it's, you know, relationships have broken down or whether it's jobs and all this stuff. You know, so there's a lot of stuff to deal with mentally moving forward, but at least there's something positive and we can start dealing with that stuff and we can start looking forward to the future with a bit of positivity, really.
Oh, absolutely. And talking about the future and talking about positive things, guess what I'm doing on Friday? I know this is a podcast about you, but guess what I'm doing?
No, what are you doing? Tell me. Let me guess. Well, I reckon you're sunbathing. No, you hate sunbathing. It's nothing to do with woo-woos. No. We've done that one enough. You're not going to Portugal. That's on the amber list. No. What are you doing?
I'm picking up my puppy, Alex.
Are you? I saw this little sneak. What was the name of your puppy? Because I saw the picture, the tag.
Oh, he's going to be... He's going to be called Milo.
Milo, I saw the little sneak peek thing. Oh, that's so exciting. I mean, it's just amazing, isn't it? I've got a little puppy, Paddington, who's he lives mostly with my parents because London's too busy for him. And as he's growing up, but he's still my puppy. He's only like 16 weeks or something now. He's still really young, but they're so amazing. Like, they make you so happy. What breed is he?
So Milo is a golden Labrador.
Oh, beautiful.
I know. And he's been rescued from Dogs Trust. So
I'm
very excited to just give our fluffy little boy a really good home.
Amazing.
I've seen you had Paddington and I've fallen in love with them. And I want to ask, have you got any top tips for me getting a puppy?
How old will yours be? How old will Milo be?
Oh, so Milo, bless him, Milo is going to be about 3.5 months, nearly 4 months by the time I get him.
Okay, and is he potty trained? Will he pee outside? I say potty. Is he outside trained? Or does he go out for a week and all that business?
I've been in regular contact with the girls at Dogs Trust and they think, they've told me that he's a very good boy. So I'm assuming he has some basics. Okay.
I think the main thing is just to teach him straight away where he goes to pee. Mm-hmm. So like every time he starts sniffing or looks like he needs a wee, take him out the back straight away. And when he has a pee, biggest fuss ever, give him a treat, you know, like big fuss. He knows like that's where he goes for a wee. And literally, if you're really, really strict with that, within like 24, 40 hours, he'll get it. But what they say now is, well, you shouldn't like tell dogs off properly, like shout at them, whatever. Yeah. It's about encouragement. When you need to pee, it's like, well done. If you pee inside, just ignore it. No fuss, nothing happens. He learns that, I only get the treat and the fuss if I do it outside.
Okay.
So that's the main thing, isn't it? You just don't want him peeing in the house, do you?
That's really good advice. Basically, I go on exactly the same way when Erkan manages to get the wee in the toilet rather than all over the seat. So I'm well practiced for that. Like, this is going to be a piece of piss.
I love that. That's perfect. And a good pun as well. A piece of piss, absolutely.
So can Milo and Paddington have puppy dates, please?
They should have a puppy day. I think so. That'd be really fun. Paddington's so high energy. So I hope Milo's ready for that. But yeah, absolutely.
Oh, honestly.
You love it.
No dog of mine was going to be chilled. He's going to be like a raving lunatic, I think.
Yeah, he's running around. He'll be running around. He'll love it. He'll love life.
How have you found being a dog dad? Because everyone keeps saying to me, that's your life over. Like, I hope you're ready now to just have like this responsibility and nothing else is going to take over. And it's making me feel a little bit nervous, if I'm honest.
Well, I mean, I've got to be honest. I mean, I cheat a bit because obviously he's living with my parents, really. So I've had him up here a bit and I go back and see him. It is hard work. It's hard work when they're puppies. As they grow up and they know the routine, they know how it is, they're chilled and it's fine, but it's worth it though. They're like, you just love them. They run in, they look at you, they're so happy. Like, you won't feel like it's proper work. Yeah, probably in the first few months when the proper puppies, it's a bit difficult. But give it time and you'll be absolutely fine.
Good. I'm so pleased. You've made me feel reassured. In fact, every time I speak to you, I do feel like you're even across like podcast or whatever, it's like a warm hug for my soul.
Well, I hope so. I'd like to think I make people feel reassured, which probably is helpful if you're talking about medicine and stuff. You kind of need to make people feel a bit more, you know, in the know, I guess.
Yeah, you have a very calming vibe about you, whereas I think I'm a little bit more neurotic. Make a good team.
No, I don't know. I think you're very comforting with stuff. I think you're high energy. I have that aspect as well. You're just a very high energy person, but that's a good thing. It's not bad.
Oh, bless you.
A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot maybe your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Right, you are a very busy man, Alex Thorne, as well as working for the NHS, of course, as well as being a dog daddy. You have also just brought out a brand new book.
I have, Live Well Every Day, which it's kind of, I can't really explain how weird it feels to do that. Because, I mean, when I was younger, and I didn't know it, but I was, you know, dyslexic, wasn't great, I really struggled with writing, essays, just hated and all this stuff. And I kind of, if I thought when I was younger that one day I'd write and publish a book, and, you know, for it to go, well, it got a number one Sunday Times bestseller, I just never would have actually believed that was possible. And, you know, what I really wanted to do with the book is kind of put down all the things, you know, on paper that I talk about, you know, with well-being, with self-care, you know, from like how to get a good night's sleep, you know, what, how to find your purpose and passion in life, how to manage your time, how to switch off, how to work, how to be more productive, you know, why does food matter? What do you eat? You know, what shouldn't you eat? How do you build good habits? You know, sexual habits. I've tried to like put everything in one book that I feel that I wish I'd have been taught when I was at school, you know, the things that as an adult that someone would have given me when I was 18 or 17, 16 and said, this is what you need to know about looking after yourself. You know, and I think I genuinely believe, and a lot of the feedback I've had from people is that there's something in there for everyone that can kind of help them, I hope.
Oh, honestly, I couldn't agree with you more. It's a wonderful book. And as well, I wanted to know, did you find the process really cathartic, Al?
Yeah, I did. I know you obviously you're kind of doing your own journey with that now, of course, which is very exciting, and I'm excited to read it as well. Actually, I think in terms of, it's funny, it's really cathartic, but it's also really, it can at some points get really stressful as well. I think you know, writing is hard work; it's not easy, and especially like when you're trying to make sure, like, because a lot of the stuff I'm talking about is medical, it needs to be right, and I think that adds a certain layer of stress as well, but. You know, when it's all done and you sit there and you look at the book in your hands and you go, oh my God, that's mine. You know, and when you write a book, I think what the thing for me that I've kind of realized is it's there forever. You know, you've created something that is, it's something you can hold. It's something real, isn't it? Tangible, that's there forever. So yeah, I am very proud of it. And as I say, like, it's more than anything, it's the feedback, hearing people going, gosh, I've tried this, it really works. I feel so much better. You know, I've learned to manage my day better. Like, I'm more productive. I can switch off better. And that for me is everything.
So it's you drawing on your knowledge as a doctor, your experiences through life, and also adding in the bits that you wish someone had told you when you were younger.
Yeah, absolutely. Things like, you know, people say to you, oh, make sure you follow your passion in life, make sure you find the right career. How do you decide what your passions are? You know, how do you decide what you're going to do? When you're young, you've got to decide what your career is going to be. And I thought, well, let's sit down and like create a bit of a roadmap of how you decide that, from pulling, you know, what are your skills? What are the things that excite you? What areas are you strong at? You know, what things actually make you feel good and make you feel happy? And kind of bringing those things together. And, you know, I think in life, a lot of people, it's very easy to kind of end up in a career that doesn't really represent, you know, your beliefs, your hobbies, your passions and things you enjoy, and end up not actually doing things outside of work that make you happy, that you enjoy. So I believe that, you know, not, you know, work is work, and it's not always about doing a career that necessarily is like the best thing you ever wanted to do. But you should have aspects in your life, either inside or outside of your workplace, that reflect your passion, your purpose, you know, something that you really, really enjoy. Look, aside from medicine and everything, I love cars. So I make sure that, you know, I get to go and have a drive in my car and enjoy, like, you know, this year I'm like, right, I really want to go watch some Formula One. I want to start like doing the things I really enjoy. It's so easy just to work, 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 and never actually do the things that make you, you know, feel fulfilled. And so I know it sounds awful saying cars make you feel fulfilled. I mean, obviously medicine does that, but you know, it's doing what you enjoy. And I think that's what I wanted really in the book. And, you know, just practical tips, stuff around sleep. Why does sleep matter? How do you get a good night's sleep? You know, what happens within the brain when you actually go through phases of sleep? You know, like all these things are really important. Like, I think even up to like the last couple of years, people don't realize how important sleep actually is. You know, sleep isn't a state of just like being sedated and out cold and nothing happens. Your brain is active, it's processing, it's creative, it's digesting. It's so important. A lot of our ideas of creativity or, you know, working a solution, that solution might be solved while you're asleep. It's come to you while you're awake. Yeah. But that good night's sleep helped you process.
And also, while you're sleeping, I remember this from when I was like banging at me training, your body's recovering, isn't it? Yeah, so whatever absolutely. You put it through that day, whether it's a hard training session or whether it's just like running around after your kids, like whatever it is, your body needs that solid 8 hours, if it is that, to recover from the day ahead and make sure you're ready for the next day.
It does. There's so many aspects. I mean, you need good night's sleep for your immune system. Your immune system relies on sleep. You need it to control things like hunger and eating and things. Because if we find that those that sleep less than 6 hours each night have, you know, a low amount of sleep, much more likely to have weight gain, diabetes, heart problems, stroke. So it's really important preventing disease. It's really important as well for concentration, for mental health. I mean, you know what happens. You wake up after a bad night's sleep. You know the term, I woke up the wrong side of the bed.
Grouchy.
You're in a grouchy. Grouchy, yeah, grouchy. But if you do that constantly and you consistently starve your, you know, body and brain of sleep, it can affect your mental health. It can make you miserable and unhappy. So, you know, I just try to kind of take that. And, you know, what I really hate is that, you know, that phrase of, oh, you sleep when you're dead and all this stuff.
Yeah.
That's rubbish.
It's a bit toxic.
Sleep allows you to get, yeah, it's toxic. Sleep gives you the opportunity to get the most, you know, out of each day. But yeah, as I say, there's lots of different chapters in there, you know, from that sexual health stuff as well, to that passion and purpose, you know, and I really just hope people find it helpful.
To listen to your talk, it's really obvious to me that, like, yes, you're passionate about this, but it feels like these things that you're talking about, I learned in school, right? I learned your maths, your algebra, I learned French, like, I learned geography. Like, I can tell you all about fucking tectonic plates. I can even go to France and tell them I've got a pencil sharpener.
That's amazing.
But none of it is useful to me at all. Like, I can honestly, I loved English at school. I love that I fell in love with the written word and the spoken word. I can articulate myself correctly, blah, 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 whatever. But apart from that, and like basic maths, I used fuck all that I learned in school. And I kind of feel like they missed a bit of a trick. Like, I wished I'd learnt more about periods, which sounds so ridiculous. But as a woman in her 30s, like, I am still discovering stuff about my body and feeling frustrated that nobody ever took the time to teach me that sooner. Because
I can't agree with you more.
Do you know what I mean?
I can't agree with you more. You know, we need to teach. This is what I'm trying to do. And in my role with youth mental health, I really want to see us redress the balance from pure academics to actually creating well-rounded people, a 360-degree view of people who understand their bodies, understand their minds, how to look after themselves, where to go when they're struggling, how to manage their bills, how to think about their tax returns. What is a mortgage? I mean, most of the population, you ask them, like, how does a mortgage work? Mm-hmm. And not being rude about anything, but people wouldn't know. Not because, you know, they can't understand. It's because they're not told. We're not taught these things. And I think there's so much of this that's important. And again, you know, this is why in this book, I try to think about in terms of health, in terms of well-being, in terms of happiness. It's like, what do you need to know? What are the fundamentals in each of your days that you need to know? The things that might surprise people. And that's what I try to wrap together. But I agree with you as a broader thing. I think we should be teaching people. No, yeah, of course, it's good to learn about geography and maths and all that stuff. But let's teach people about, you know, human biology as well properly. Like, so women and men understand about, and people understand about periods and stuff. You know, we all need to understand that.
That's,
you know,
it.
It's very important for all of us.
The amount of time I spent fannying on with a Bunsen burner, Alex, when I could have been learning about my actual biological body clock, it would have saved us a lot of fucking misery as an adult. That's all I'm saying.
Yeah,
ridiculous. Well, Alex, I have absolutely loved talking to you in part one. I'm going to give you a little bit of a break because I need a wee. Will you come back with us in part two, please?
I shall. I'll have a cup of tea. We're back at it.
Yes, that's me boy.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.